Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's Big Fat Christmas show, I'm going to be talking about The Color Purple, Ferrari, All of Us Strangers, The Boys in the Boat, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, Migration, and Anyone But You. Wow, that's a lot of movies I'm going to be talking about. Not all of them I've seen, because some of them, they don't let me see something like this early. Anyways, I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Riff Track's version of It's a Wonderful Life. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Because it's Christmas, and we're leading almost to the end of the year, and this is such a weird time for the entertainment industry because it's simultaneously super busy and vacant as well. Because at this time of year, you've got award season. Everything's swirling around. We've got nominations out there. We've got people doing award campaigns, and then there's movies that they'd hope would get some award buzz that didn't, and they still have to come out. So, but at the same time, you have blockbusters that have no chance whatsoever of getting any sort of award, but those are also trying to be seen. But there are so many movies that release at Christmas during that week because, you know, we've got the weekend and then Christmas falls on Monday. So it's coming. And then suddenly nothing gets released for New Year's. And then it's usually a horror movie at the beginning of January. But one of the things that the industry has been focusing on, has been worried about, has been the box office for the year. Because going into 2023, it was a suffering box office because we have not yet fully recovered in terms of getting people out to the theaters and sort of adjusting the business model since COVID. And we've had big movies. For example, last year, you know, we had Top Gun Maverick. And everyone's like, well, that one did well. And it's like, you had one. You had like Top Gun Maverick. You had Avatar did very, very well. But you also had movies that didn't do terribly well. There were a lot of movies that were tough to start. And the overall box office has been down. And then this year, leading into the first half of the year, we were doing great. And then suddenly, writer's strike, kablam. And then actor's strike, kablam. The 1-2 bit of the writer's strike and the actor's strike had a huge impact, not just because of solidarity, but when the actor's strike started in the middle of the summer, actors could not promote their work. And so they couldn't talk about stuff on The Tonight Show or whatever. And when the writer's strike was going on, The Tonight Show wasn't airing. It slowed everything down. And they're all worried about the box office. And the only big movie that's coming out this week is Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. And pretty much they're betting the farm on this. Now, I don't know how well it's going to do. I'll talk about the movie itself later. But I don't know if it's going to do well. It's certainly in the climate we're in with superhero movies not doing well at all. And DC movies suffering catastrophic box office failure. Everyone's focusing on Marvel and the flop of the Marvels, but DC, I mean, they had the, you know, they had Shazam, they had Black Adam, they had the Flash, and they had Blue Beetle. Nothing's doing well for them. So everything's hinging on Aquaman, and if it's not a hit, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in 2024. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer part. I'm not going to pull new trailers this week because I want to talk looking ahead to 2024. And what am I interested in? I don't care what other critics say. I don't care what people who are trying to promote things say. I have the stuff that's catching my eye. And so let's talk about the ones. I'm going to play trailers for the movies that I'm looking forward to coming up. And the first one, I'm doing them chronologically, which comes out on March 1st, is Dune Part 2, which was supposed to come out last month, but it didn't because of the actor strike. But Dune Part 2 on March 1st.
This world is beyond cruelty.
Do you believe in God?
Little son.
He does not speak or act like a weakling. Nor did his father.
You have to be ready.
What if Paul Atreides is still alive?
This is my doom. Kill them all. Show me who you are.
Deal with this prophet.
My visions are out of control.
I've said before, I'm not a huge fan of the new versions of Dune, but I want to complete it. I am a bit of a completist, so I want to get the second part of the story. This one actually looks like it's a little bit more dynamic than the first movie. I thought the first movie was a little bit monochromatic, not just in the imagery, but in the tone. So we'll see if this works. I still dearly, dearly love the David Lynch version. You will have to suffer through me talking about David Lynch's Dune next March when this comes out. But I am curious to see what they do with it, especially with some of the elements and people that we have not seen in the film or greatly seen in the film so far. Now, the next one, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, it was my trailer park pick, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which comes to theaters April 12th.
This world has more secrets than we could possibly imagine.
What is that?
That's not Kong. Who could have done this?
Kong can't stop this on his own.
He won't be alone.
I like these new Godzilla movies. I don't want to say too much about this because I talked about it a couple weeks ago in the trailer park. But yeah, I like these SmackDown movies. I think that the effects have gotten to the point that it's not just people in rubber suits. You can make a really cool looking movie and I find them fun. As long as they don't go back to the boring crap that they were doing in the first Godzilla movie back in, what was that, 2014? You know, make it more like the Monster Smackdowns and Kong versus Godzilla, the other movie that we had a couple years ago during the pandemic, which actually did well during the pandemic. Now, the next movie is one I am looking forward to, but I don't have a trailer for because they haven't dropped a trailer. There's been so many rumors and bits and bobs dropped about this. I don't even watch that stuff anymore. It's Deadpool 3. Now, I'm really looking forward to that, but there's no trailer for Deadpool 3. So, since it's before Christmas, I thought I'd just play the Once Upon a Deadpool trailer.
Right before Christmas, a good guy in red is coming to theaters with his new sidekick, Fred.
Why am I here?
You're in a PG-13 version of Deadpool. Filtered through the prism of childlike innocence.
I'm a grown
man. And nobody
man.
Does childlike innocence like you, Fred. Nobody. I need you almost as much as you need me.
I don't need you at all.
You need me to untie you once we're done.
This was one that came out, whatever, several years ago, where they basically did a PG-13 edit of Deadpool, which I don't know how they did. That's sort of like how they did a TV edit of Scarface, the Brian De Palma film. But they managed to do it. But that's not the movie that's coming out on July 26th. Deadpool 3, starring Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine. I'm looking forward to that one just because, to me, this is what's possibly going to be able to save Marvel. This is the new blood, the resurrection of the Fox properties under the Marvel Cinematic Universe banner certainly has a chance. Now, the last one, it doesn't come out for a year. It's December 25th, 2024, which seems an odd time to release this. I don't know why I don't release this in Halloween. And that is Robert Eggers' version of Nosferatu. Now, there is no trailer for this. But I want to play something, so I thought I'd play this.
I know I should show you something, and I found this piece of film lying around the editing room. It's not from my picture, but I think you'll find it interesting and quite informative.
The call of the Alpenhorn echoes across the Danskin Peninsula, part of Denmark's cheese belt, signaling to all those with nothing better to do the start of Scandinavia's happiest tradition, the Chelgenfjord. Or Cheese Festival, or Jürgen Velk.
Getting back to Nosferatu, I love the original movie, and I'm very curious to see what Robert Eggers has to do with it. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about All of Us Strangers and the boys in the book. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about some of the movies that are opening. I think the first ones I'm going to talk about are the ones that are opening on Christmas. So there's a couple days for these. But the first one is All of Us Strangers. A lot of these are going to open on Christmas Day in limited release. You're going to see them rolling out into January. So you may not be able to see this one this week yet. But let's talk about it. A gay man in London discovers he can visit his dead parents in their old suburban home.
This is Mom and Dad.
They died just before I was 12.
How's it going?
Strangely. Is this real?
Does it feel real?
Our boy's back home.
Our son. Look at you. You were just a boy. Now you're not.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't think that matters.
This is a very deliberate and intimate character study. Andrew Scott stars in it. And not to be confused with Adam Scott, who was Ben Wyatt from Parks and Rec, and he was on Party Down. No. Andrew Scott, he's a British actor. You might recognize him. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Fleabag with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. He played the priest that was maybe thinking of leaving the cloth for some sexual activity. He also played Moriarty in the BBC Sherlock. He's a great actor, but he's sort of low-key, and he very much low-keys this as well. The thing is he lives in this flat in this pretty much empty building, and he runs into this guy who's there, and they're both gay, and they start a relationship. And then we learn about his parents. He talks about his parents having gotten killed in a car crash when he was younger. And he ends up finding his way back to his suburban home outside of London somewhere. And when he goes there, he runs into his actual parents, his parents as they were right before they died. And of course, he's an adult now. And it gives him a chance to interact with them, sort of like this last chance type thing. And he knows that there's something fantastical going on, and he knows it's not going to last forever. But he keeps going back. He's sort of trapped in whatever this surreal thing is. And it bleeds over into other things in his life, and there's an awareness of it. It's not like they think he's a child. They're just like, wow, this is great that we get to spend some time with you. But it's one of those movies, this is very much an independent art house type movie. And when you have these kind of films, you can have some very fantastic elements to it, but they make it much more pragmatic in its delivery. So it doesn't feel like it's out there. The subject matter and the story does not feel like it's unreachable, that it's impossible to have happen. It feels very grounded. And a lot of that has to do with the actors. And it's got a good cast. Andrew Scott's very good. Paul Mescal, who's made a lot of noise for himself because he was in a movie last year, got a lot of praise for that. I'm not a huge Paul Mescal fan. I think he's good, but he's better than Timothy Chalamet. But I still think he's like, there's a hype surrounding him that maybe isn't completely earned. But then his parents are played by Jamie Bell and Claire Foy. And they do a great, because they're about the same age as him. But they do a great job embodying his parents after death, basically embodying them where they can still treat him and talk to him like they're his son. But when you look at them in a room together, they all look contemporary. So it's an interesting movie, and it has some interesting turns in the plot. I think they overdo some of the relationship between him and the other guy in the building, Paul Mescal. And I understand why they do that, but it gets sort of dull. You're just like, okay, yeah, they're going out and having fun. And, you know, what else have you got? Let's develop the story. You know, it is a bit of a mopey movie, but I think it still works. I mean, I respect it for what it is. I mean, the fantastical premise it's more of a delivery method for an intimate character study that is well acted, but otherwise a bit too familiar. I love the fantastical elements. I like what it plays around with, but it does seem to sort of retread a lot of character beats. But still, I'm going to say that All of Us Strangers kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Boys in the Boat. George Clooney directs this true story of a rowing crew from the University of Washington during the Great Depression as they seek Olympic gold.
Looks like you still owe a balance on this semester.
So what's that about, making some money?
Yeah, the rowing team. Your Honor, you get a part-time job included, cheap place to live.
Eight-man crew is the most difficult team sport in the world. The average human body is just not meant for such things. Most of you will not be chosen.
Beautiful speech, Coach.
You're announcing the team today. Are you going to make it?
We got to keep these, right? As long as we stay on the team.
You know, George Clooney's career, as an actor, you really can't fault him. He knew how to manage himself. Once he got on ER, he got himself into movies fast. Before he got on ER, he was in Return of the Killer Tomatoes. That's one of my favorite George Clooney movies, by the way. But he really found a way to get himself into the films, and he became a superstar, a mega superstar. But as a director, it's been really hit or miss. Some of his stuff I've really, really liked. You know, I mean, even something like Suburbicon, I thought was very on the nose and it hit you heavy. But I liked what they were doing with that movie. Midnight Sky, which is the most recent one he did for Netflix, that one was just kind of okay. I think he sometimes gets lost in his own stuff and doesn't know how to make a point sometimes, and also doesn't know how to really charge the characters that you care about. I mean, that's one of my problems with The Boys in the Boat. It's a great story. I mean, it's your very standard underdog story. It's about this rowing crew that they're JV too. And they click. It's sort of like that movie Miracle about the Miracle on Ice. You get the right people together and they click, and that's good. But The Boys in the Boat, the big problem is the characters just, it's not that the characters aren't likable. I mean, they're fine, but they're very disposable. I watched it recently, but I can't tell you what any of the characters were really doing. They just seemed like cardboard cutouts. Maybe part of it was the acting, because the actors aren't huge stars. But maybe I think part of it was also just the writing. The writing of the characters didn't give any sort of dynamic oomph to them. And like, there's this main character who I can't remember his name, and the girl that he likes, and she likes him. But the relationship just is sort of like, well, she's a pretty girl, and they like each other, and this is what's going to happen. There's no development. There's no, it's just sort of like they just are put together, and you know, they're like a Barbie and a Ken doll just like put in a set, and you don't have any sort of dynamic force between them. But I mean, the sports stuff is cool, although it is about rowing, which isn't exactly as charged as something like football or baseball or basketball. You know, so the rowing crew, I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. But it isn't the kind of movie that I'm stampeding out to see. I mean, the elements to it, I mean, it's a beautiful looking movie. It's got great cinematography. It's got very good production design. Maybe not the best of the year, but it is very forgettable for me. I mean, it's an inspiring story, but it's held back by pedantic characters and dialogue. I'm going to have to say The Boys in the Boat kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Color Purple and Ferrari. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Color Purple. This musical adaptation of Alice Walker's novel sees a black woman from Georgia in the early 20th century face abuse and betrayal in her life.
Today, our teacher taught us about a place called Africa. She say our mamas come from Queens over there. That means that we, royalty. Even if we have to part, you and me,
us have one heart.
You must ain't got no kinfolk around these parts.
All I had was my sister. She was the only one ever loved me.
I have to admit, this is full disclosure, I have never seen the original The Color Purple. It was 1985. I was 14. It was not something I was going to go race out and see. I have respect for it, I do. And I remember this was like Steven Spielberg's. He did some other stuff before that, but this was really back in 1985. This was his first shot at saying, I can do drama as well. I don't just do Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. and Close Encounters. I can do serious drama. And it helped put Whoopi Goldberg on the map. It helped put Oprah on the map as an actress. And it was very well received. I've just never seen it. And then I've never gotten around to seeing it again because it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes. And you know, everybody knows my views of how long movies can be and how tough they are to finally watch if they're that long. So I just have never gotten around to seeing it. And then when I heard that they were doing this movie, I was like, I should watch it. And it's there. But I never got around to seeing it. I got a lot going on my plate. And, you know, taking time out for a 3 hour movie is a little bit much. So I ended up just watching the movie Cold, which was an interesting thing because I've never seen the movie. I didn't know anything about it. I mean, I knew it was a period piece about black people in the South, and that's basically all I knew about it. So then I watched this version. I'd also never seen the stage play or Broadway production. And first thing that struck me about this movie is it is honestly some of the best cinematography you're going to see this year. It has such a good look, especially at this time in cinema where you're seeing people use that natural lighting and nobody can see people's faces. This thing's well lit. It has the darker elements to it, but you can see people and it's dynamic and it's beautiful color palette that changes depending on where you are. I mean, it's a very gorgeous looking movie. The story's a little bit rough. Not that that's bad. It's just, it's a punishing story. The character of Celia, who's played by Fantasia from American Idol. By the way, she does a great job in this. She does a really good job acting in this movie. I mean, I think she deserves some acting award credit. But she plays that main character, and what she goes through is just awful, you know, and it's punishing. And you see this a lot with some of these dramas where it's just, I'm like, why do I need to watch, you know, an hour and a half of somebody being abused and being berated? You know, she's suffering emotional, sexual, and physical abuse. And it's just like, why? And I know there's a payoff. I know you're going to get redemption eventually, but it's a little bit rough to sit through. I'm never a big fan of that. I don't like that being the brunt of the movie. And a good chunk of it is that. But what's nice about this as a musical, the musical numbers actually break that up a bit. And I've seen people criticize it as saying that they're awkwardly put in. I disagree. I think that the musical numbers break up the heaviness of the movie. And there are some real good show-stopping numbers in it. Some great music, some great performances. It also, oftentimes, when you get these musical numbers, it breaks out into a sort of a surreal, otherworldly view of it, sort of like what they did with Chicago. If you recall in the movie Chicago, when they had big musical numbers, it turned into a glitz and glamour thing, and then they kind of go back to the real world. Cabaret did that a little bit. So anything that uses a darker element, it's nice to use a level of surrealism to break out of the drabness that you're in. And so they have some really creative ways of doing that. But it's an uplifting movie. I mean, eventually get to it. Very well acted. Colman Domingo, who was in Rustin. He plays Rustin, the character of Rustin, in the Netflix film. He does a great performance there. He plays the abusive husband in this one, and he does a great job in it. It's a very good cast and a very well-done movie. I mean, it's tough to watch at times due to its punishing nature. But this musical has some fantastic performances and a beautiful look. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Ferrari. This biopic examines the business and family struggles facing Enzo Ferrari in the 1950s.
Enzo,
you're going broke.
How?
You spend more than you make.
So what do I do?
Win the Mille Miglia, Enzo. Or you are out of business.
This is a gun pointed at our head. You should assign me control of your stock. I have to have all the cards in my hand.
Well, half the cards are in my hand.
This is directed by Michael Mann. And I think it's worth mentioning because there are some people who, to them, Michael Mann can do no wrong. I am not one of those people. I recently watched, because I had never seen it all the way through, I recently, earlier this year, watched Heat, which is sort of his piece de resistance of his career. I mean, that's the one everybody talks about when they say Michael Mann. And Heat's a good movie, but one of the things that Michael Mann does is he's very deliberate and drawn out. He will have some pretty intense action moments, but the rest of the movie sometimes can feel a little muted. Some of his movies, like Collateral, I really enjoyed Collateral, but a lot of his other movies, they just seem to be almost too sedated, even. They just seem not bland, but they're dragged down by a weightiness of his direction. And I feel that with Ferrari. Now, Adam Driver does a fine job in the role. I think he does a better job playing Italian than he did in House of Gucci, that's for sure. But that's okay, because Shailene Woodley plays his lover, which is weird, because they're about the same age, but he plays much older, and so he's made up to be much older. But she plays as his lover, and she does all the work in doing a terrible Italian accent. You know, whatever Adam Driver did in House of Gucci, she does times 10 in this film, because her accent is god-awful. Penelope Cruz plays his wife, and she does a great job. Penelope Cruz, I think, can really act as long as she's given the right role. I've seen some things where she's terrible in, but boy, she can really knock it out of the park when she needs to, and she does a great job. The two of them have a great chemistry, Driver and Cruz. There are moments in the movie that seem to be weighted down by Michael Mann's directing. You know, what's funny is there was this news that hit a couple weeks ago. There's so many just awkward questions being asked of Adam Driver. Like what was that thing Chris Wallace saying? Well, you don't look like a movie star. And I'm like, you can't say that Adam Driver is unattractive. I mean, I know women that are just hot for peanuts on him. And I don't even know what that means. I made that up. Hot for peanuts. So this guy at a press conference asking him a question about the accident footage, because there's a couple accidents that happened in the movie, because I mean, it was a race car driver. And he said they looked cheesy. And Adam Driver told him to F off or something like that, which is what made these sort of viral rounds. Look, the guy was a jerk and he didn't phrase the question right. But I will say this. The crashes in this don't look great. Like, there's one real catastrophic crash that, and maybe it's because I watched it. I did not see it on the big screen. I saw it on a screener disc. So maybe it just didn't look right on a TV. Maybe it would have looked better on the big screen. But some of the action moments look really bad. The rest of it, I mean, it's shot in Italy. It looks beautiful. And I mean, I think Adam Driver does a good job acting in it. It's exactly what I kind of anticipated for a Michael Mann biopic about somebody I don't care anything about. I'm not a sports car guy. I'm not a racing guy. So it's kind of out of my interest level. I don't know. The awkward pacing drags this intriguing story down. I mean, it is intriguing. It's interesting to see what happens in his business and how it impacts his personal life. But it does have some fine performances. I'm going to have to say still that Ferrari just didn't do it for me. It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be doing previews of Aquaman, Migration, and Anyone But You, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Riff Tracks' It's a Wonderful Life. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're going to be continuing with the new movies. I'm not going to review these. I actually haven't had a chance to. They're just either schedule or the fact they didn't screen them. Like Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, they didn't screen. They didn't screen anywhere in Ohio, which to me is a bad sign. But let's talk about the big ones that are out. And these are the ones that are open this weekend. The rest of them all, you kind of have to wait till Christmas Day. But these are the ones that are opening this weekend. The first one, let's just go ahead and play the trailer and talk about Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Black Manta returns with the powerful Black Trident, and Aquaman has to team up with his disgraced brother to defend Atlantis.
I'm going to kill Aquaman and destroy everything he holds dear.
murder his family and burn his kingdom to ash.
He must be stopped, or a global meltdown is imminent.
I cannot believe you let this happen.
Yeah, well, I hate this job.
True king builds bridges, right?
I really enjoyed the first Aquaman movie, but that was in a building period for the DC Extended Universe. And right now, this is like the last in the run, because they're essentially rebooting the universe. And if you look at what's happened with The Flash, and even before that, Black Adam and Shazam, Fury of the Gods, I think people are done with this version of DC. And no matter how good or bad Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom is, I think people are ready to move on. And we don't even know if Aquaman's going to be played by Jason Momoa. There's rumors that he's going to be playing Lobo in the new DC stuff. So this is one of those movies. It's sort of a lame duck movie. And that's kind of a shame, because I would like to see something more come of it. I grew up with DC, but now that they're rebooting it, you got to get doing it. That's the danger of putting stuff in a pipeline. The advantage of putting stuff in a pipeline is you've got movie coming out after movie. That's how Marvel had that string of 30 hits. But when you don't have them being hits, that can make you really suffer and lose a lot of money. So we'll see. The next one that's coming out this weekend is Migration. Speaking of lame ducks, I'm hilarious. A family of ducks plan to fly south to Jamaica, but get detoured into New York City.
They must be migrating.
Migration? What a stupid idea.
Okay, you're impossible.
Because I found a safe place for us to live.
I want us to get out and see the world.
What sort of father would I be if I put my young fowl in harm's way for no reason except a chance at a Caribbean vacation?
I don't want to miss out on life because you're afraid to leave this pond.
Here we go. Tail for the torsion.
Check.
Wing deployment.
Check.
Let's fly.
This, I didn't get a chance to see because the screening date that they did, the early screening, just did not correspond with my schedule. So kudos to Universal for screening this. I didn't get a chance to see it. So let them know that they have confidence in it. It's also on their award slate, although it's coming out so late that they didn't provide screeners for it either. So I haven't seen this one. This entire thing is me making excuses. This entire last bit of the show is me begging people's forgiveness for not seeing movies, because I've seen so many other movies this year. But Migration kind of looks funny. It looks like it's a kid's movie. I'm curious to see it. And we'll see if it does better than Trolls Band Together, which did okay for what it was. The next one I want to talk about really quickly is Anyone But You. A couple that doesn't particularly like each other pretend to be in love during a destination wedding.
That's the jerk Poopy got with when she was on her break from Jonathan.
I could never be with someone like him.
This girl's a disaster.
What's going on over there?
They dated. She crushed his heart.
That man does not have a heart.
Honey, look who's here.
Who is it?
My ex, Jonathan. My parents have been trying to get us back together.
He's like a son to us.
Maybe we should just tell everyone we're together.
What?
It would solve that problem for me, and you clearly want Margaret. She sees you with me. She wants what she can't have.
There's no way we can convince anyone we actually like each other.
Okay, this stars Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. And Glenn Powell's not a terrible actor. I think he can hack his way through stuff. I don't think he's bad. Sydney Sweeney is not a good actor. There are two big reasons why she's well-known. But she's very attractive, and she's got a great little body. But even just in the trailer of this, she's awful. She is not a good actor. And that's the problem with Hollywood being so focused on imagery. And I think that that's a microcosm for this movie, because if this movie's about anything, it's about beautiful people pretending to be in love. And I saw somebody make a comment about Glenn Powell, and they're absolutely right that he's got everything that looks like you need for a movie star. He looks attractive. He's a good-looking guy. But he's just bland. I've seen several movies. I mean, he was in Top Gun, but was he what you remembered from Top Gun Maverick? And he was also in that movie Devotion with Jonathan Majors last year. And he was just sort of passable in that. I mean, he's not terrible, but he's not great. And you watch the trailer of this, And he only is really good at acting if he's got somebody to bounce off of. Like, against Jonathan Majors, and for all the crap going on with him, at least Jonathan Majors is a good actor. But in Devotion, that played into it. And Top Gun, you had a lot of people who maybe weren't great actors, but they fit the part well. So he played well in Top Gun Maverick. But in this one, the two of them, it's just like this black hole of acting just opens up and sucks everybody in. This wasn't screened. Big surprise. Big surprise. It wasn't screened. This thing looks awful. From the moment I saw the first trailer, this looks terrible. But who? It's probably going to make $1 billion. It'll probably make more than Aquaman. So who knows? You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is a Christmas-themed one, and it is on Riff Tracks. They've done a version of It's a Wonderful Life, and I say a version of it. I'll explain it. Let's go ahead and play the trailer, because it's the Riff Tracks guys doing It's a Wonderful Life. Yes, that one, the good one. The guys at Riff Tracks poke fun at the classic Christmas movie with some clever editing.
Wish I had $1 million. Hot dog!
Make up your mind, kid. You want $1 million or a hot dog?
Am I talking too much?
Yes. Why don't you kiss her instead of talking at her dad?
Good advice, voyeuristic porch guy.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Excuse you for what?
I burped.
Oh, yeah? Well, I committed a serious felony, so there.
It's time for Riff Tracks.
Ho, 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 ho. When It's a Wonderful Life got traction, it did okay when it came out, but then it became a Christmas staple because it went into the public domain. And any TV station that had a copy of it could play it whenever they wanted to without paying any sort of royalties to anyone. And so that's why a bunch of stations, they'd play it at Christmas, and it got played a lot. And so then everybody associated with Christmas. I mean, it was a Christmas movie. You look at the title cards, and they're Christmas title cards. So you watch the movie now, and it's definitely a Christmas movie, but that's what made it popular in the 70s and 80s. Well, and then at some point, somebody realized, oh, it gets played so much, let's make some money off of it. So then everybody tried to find a way to get the rights. And there are different ways that people have gone after the rights. One of them is somebody got the rights to the music that's played in the background of several scenes. For example, there's a scene where he's in Martini's bar and he gets punched in the face by the teacher's husband. There's music in the background that's playing, because when you watch this edit of it, that music's not there. They've stripped it out. That's one way that somebody tried to secure the rights to the original broadcast of it. Somebody else got those rights to the original story and then started to become litigious about people playing it, saying, hey, you're infringing upon my rights because this story is based on that. But there's only about 10 minutes of the movie that are actually part of the story, which is when he's not been born. So what they do is they just lift that part out. I mean, and it's smash cuts from Clarence saying, okay, let's do it, to him running down the street going, Merry Christmas, Emporium! Merry Christmas, you old building alone! So, and I was telling this to my son, and my son's like, you know, that's basically you're seeing the perspective from everybody else aside from George Bailey. You don't see that little dream sequence in the middle. And I'm like, that's actually an interesting way of framing it. So if you can handle that weird smash cut without that emotional impact of him discovering what it's like if he weren't alive, you spend your time in Pottersville. It's still funny because there's still, it's like 1 hour and 45 minutes, and it's hilarious because it's Riff Tracks. And this is why Riff Tracks works. It's not just them making fun of a movie and hating on it. It's them finding the absurdity and the silliness in it. And you heard some of the quips in the trailer. That's what makes a movie fun for Riff Tracks. So even a movie I dearly, dearly love, I love It's a Wonderful Life, one of my favorite movies of all time, I can still have a lot of fun hearing what the guys have to say about it. I love this film dearly, but there's a lot of silliness that can be mined from it as well. I'm going to have to say the Riff Tracks version of It's a Wonderful Life totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it. I need to go. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody. And when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about the best and worst of 2023. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at Ho Ho Home.